Hi, and welcome to this latest episode of the To Industry podcast. This week we're doing, are we doing week 17 or week 18, Tom?
I think it's week 17, but we're recording it in week 18.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah,
we'd like to give the viewers at home just full transparency.
You know? Yeah. And in full transparency mode, again, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only and not to be considered as financial advice. That being said, this week we're going to talk about ARM and Windows on ARM computers and stuff, and we're going to talk about Tesla and the electric vehicle market. Tom, what tickled you this week, man? What did you notice this week?
Firstly, I'd like to point our listeners to what you just said, that this was not financial advice.
Again?
Turns out I didn't take... I just want to go back to the point you made that this whole show is not financial advice. And
do you think we're going to get sued if we don't say it twice every podcast?
No, I just like to underline that point because I followed our advice a couple of weeks ago. Oil, Boeing. What else did we have? A couple of topics. And if you would have followed our advice, you probably would have done pretty shit in the market the past, you know, 2-3 weeks.
Is that so? I don't think
I have I don't know. I just get that feeling. So
No.
If you think you would have done well, really?
When we did our podcast about Boeing, the stock was at 178, and it's now at 172. So you know, it dipped.
Well, the Magnificent Seven haven't done that great the past 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. But we didn't give any real advice about the Magnificent Seven.
No, but...
Yeah. And you could argue we were the most positive about Google, and Google has gained since.
Google had great earnings. You know, if you're talking about what's kind of been on my mind, it's just... I think the one thing that really irked me was the day that Meta came out with results and Tesla came out with results on the exact same day. I don't quote me, but I think it was Wednesday or Tuesday last week. Meta, fantastic earnings. You know, massive revenue growth year over year, amazing profitability. Musk did say on the call he was investing in this stupid virtual reality thing, but A-plus balance
Musk?
Sheet, A-plus financial results, A-plus balance sheet, stock down 12%. Then you have the idiot Musk on the other end who has terrible results, right? Losing massive amounts of money. And the man talks for like 5 seconds about a robo-taxi. Stock is up 15%. I know it's not, you know, it's not that easy to it's not that black and white, but, you know, you read all the big books, you listen to all the big guys, you're like, what, how does that work, you know?
Are you telling me you don't believe in robo-taxi, Tom?
I believe so much in robo-taxi that I've just been buying Tesla calls. That's all I've been doing the past week. So,
well, in that case, you would have made money.
Definitely. But if we're talking about like what I've noticed this past week, you know, the first week of Q2 earnings, or Q1 earnings, but in Q2, it's so volatile, it's so crazy, it's so non-fundamental driven that you know it puts you to thinking a little bit. Where are we in the business cycle? What are stocks going to do going forward? How are we valued? It feels a bit frothy. So that's been my week. Well, what about you?
I don't think they've been that frothy.
I mean, Google up 10%. Do you see Philips today?
Yeah, because they finally settled their lawsuit. But so what did the stock do?
It's up like 40% in a day.
Really? 40%?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not see that.
Google up 10%, Meta down 15%. It just doesn't quite make sense, you know. Does a company really deserve to lose that much value?
Hmm.
Based off for Meta, what are fantastic results. So that's kind of irked me the past week.
I feel like the earnings have just been a bit all over the place. One company has been good, another company has been generally, maybe not for Tesla and Meta, but generally it is reflected in stock prices.
Over the long term, of course, right?
Yeah, but also this past week.
I do not think Tesla being up 15% because they talked about a robo-taxi is justified.
No, I'm saying generally, Tom.
Generally, okay. I think we should, once everything's out in the open, I don't know if that's in 2 weeks or 4 weeks from now, but we should go into it, maybe as a topic, and kind of go through our favorite, the favorite results we had, or things that popped up the most for whatever reason.
Or see if, you know, it corresponded with how the earnings were and what the stock did.
Yeah, and then I can get into more detail without, you know, boring the listeners about how ridiculous I found Tesla and Meta. So
Philips 40% is ridiculous, though.
I mean, on the one hand, yes. On the other hand, you see that a lot with these healthcare things, right? Like, once they do find a new drug, or I know it's not really comparable, but these healthcare companies tend to be quite volatile on, you know, court decisions, let's say.
But that's lawsuits. Generally in regards to a new drug, not necessarily with regards to like device makers. Because they don't, Philips doesn't make drugs in itself. They make like CT scanners and stuff like that.
No, but I don't know the English term, the sleep apnea machines that they use.
Yeah.
It's a machine, but it's also a healthcare solution in the same way a medicine is, right?
Yeah, I guess, but for a device, contrary to a pill or something, the procedure is way different. The legal route to go to market.
True, but I mean it makes sense. I don't know if 40% makes sense.
The stock was already down to plus 30.
Okay, the stock has been in the shitter. It's a European company, so obviously we're a bit closer to it than maybe some of our listeners in the States or in the UK. Mm. But it's been down in the dumps, and obviously it's still a big company. And I think this was such a big lawsuit that was hanging over them, just solving this in and of itself, even though it was quite a big settlement, you know, gives investors some form of stability to work off of, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And analysts expected it to be multiple times larger.
Exactly.
So, you know,
and they've settled this, right? In. Class action settled, even future claims, it's all finished now. So they can focus on growing the company again, which I hope.
Talking about the difference between Europe and the US, I've been looking into getting a new laptop, an Apple laptop myself. That's also why, you know, I got into the Windows on ARM thing, which we're talking about next this week.
But, Stop spoiling the topic, man.
Okay, sorry, man. But the price difference of Apple products between Europe and the US is insane.
Two disclaimers there. One, and I don't think they list the price, including taxes, in the States. So even if you buy the computer, depending on the state that you live in, Delaware, you pay 0% sales tax, but in New York, it's similar to where we live.
Really? Is it 20% in New York?
I don't know. It's high. It's higher. Don't quote me. But so you still need to add that. But, you know.
But like, the difference is insane. Because here, I looked at the base model MacBook Pro with the M3 chip in the Netherlands. That is over 2,000 euros. While in the US, the same thing is $1,600.
Yeah. Okay. That. But I mean, let's assume, you know, 1,600. Let's add 20% to that. That's like 320. Then you get close to $2,000 versus 2,000 euros with the currency. It's a difference.
Assuming that the currency is the same value, but the euro is more expensive than the dollar.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly
my
point.
It's really quite a bit more expensive. Yeah. I was a bit shocked by it. It's quite a big difference.
See if you can find someone that, you know, will recently travel to a country where there are no VAT, you know.
Yeah, I'm really gonna need that, man. Jeez.
Oh well. Anyways, shall we dive into ARM?
Yeah, let's do it.
To industry. All right. Topic number one, as you have alluded to a couple of times in the introduction, is ARM. I think ARM has been, it's a little bit off the headline news because I think it's been public now for a couple of quarters, but it's still quite a hot stock, a hot company, a hot product that's being talked about a lot also with our, you know, future digitalization. So Cass, maybe you can take us through ARM a little bit and what you want to discuss.
Yeah, the funny thing is I kind of want to discuss anything except ARM.
Oh.
Because it's not really, yeah, it's not really about ARM itself.
Way to lead on the listener. At the beginning, you're constantly going on about ARM, you know, people getting excited, and then you come with this bombshell.
But it's about, you know, which products are going to use ARM.
You got to be more clear in the sense with that, of, but you know, whatever.
ARM's architecture, man.
Right. Go ahead.
But, I got into this because, you know, as I alluded to maybe in the introduction, I kind of want to get a new laptop. And since we both use Excel quite a bit, I wanted to know if, you know, the new Apple Silicon products, if they work well with Excel. And then, you know, I was looking around a little bit. And the interesting thing is that there's also Windows on ARM. And Microsoft has had that in development for quite a bit.
Yeah, I feel like it's been around for like a decade. I remember there was a Surface laptop that came out from Microsoft a long time ago, but I saw a picture of it the other day. That thing looks old now.
Yeah. But yeah, it was bad. And it was bad because it just wasn't the main focus. Everything was focused on the x86 architecture, which is basically what all the existing older chips are based off of and what Intel use and what AMD use. But then Apple Silicon came, you know, the M chips. And that was a massive wake-up call. And so Windows or Microsoft has basically restarted their entire effort to get Windows working well on ARM. And together with that, the company Qualcomm had made a deal with Microsoft to be the exclusive chip supplier of Windows on ARM. And now they're coming out with their own new, basically they're saying that the performance of their chips is equal or better than the Apple M chips.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's getting all interesting. And it's also interesting how they got there, because they basically, the main engineers who worked on the Apple Silicon started their own startup that got bought by Qualcomm. And now the Qualcomm chips that are coming out, the Snapdragon X line with the X Elite and the X Plus chips, they're basically this startup design chip. It's not actually in-house Qualcomm. It's basically this chip that this startup made from these X Apple Silicon engineers, which is quite interesting.
Oh, really? Didn't know that.
Yeah. But this is going to be a game changer in terms of performance per watt and therefore battery life, just as it was with the Apple Silicon. So, you know, the questions are going to be, this new generation of Windows laptops will probably compete with Apple Silicon. But the question is, how quick will adoption by the different laptop manufacturers be? And, you know, what will be the possible answer that, you know, Intel and AMD come with? And, you know, what stocks, you know, are going to be interesting? So, yeah, that was basically the angle I wanted to take. Because ARM stock itself, a lot of, I think, per chip, ARM gets a royalty.
Yeah.
So that will boost earnings for ARM itself. But ARM itself is also already quite highly valued. I don't know exactly from the top of my head, because I didn't look that up, because I don't find ARM as interesting, even though that sounds a bit, you know, weird. But I mainly looked at, you know, what's Qualcomm valued at, what's Intel valued at, what's AMD valued at. And I also looked at a few of the laptop makers, you know, your Dell, your Acer, your Asus, HP and MSI. You know, that's what I looked at. And what do you think, Tom?
I think it's important to take a kind of a step back and realize, okay, what is it that they do? And why is ARM so much better of a choice? And why might it not be? So I think the fundamental difference is the design of the chip and all the, let's say, separate controllers and chips you need around the CPU. ARM inherently, you see that with Apple Silicon, you see that with a new Qualcomm chip. ARM design allows you to put everything onto one piece, on one chip. memory, storage, graphics card, sound controller, CPU. It's all on one thing. And the ARM design architecture allows you to easily do that. x86 is the exact opposite. So I think that kind of gleams it down into the advantages and disadvantages, in the sense that ARM, because you do everything on the same chip area, I'm making it very simple now, but that's kind of how you should look at it, brings an inherent power advantage. While
that's not necessarily the case, I think. I think the case was that when x86 came around, programming languages were much more basic and needed to align with the processor much more, otherwise performance would really suffer. And therefore, to align that, the software was much more did decide what the chip would be looking like. And therefore, they made a really complex instruction set for this chip that would be able to simply then execute the software. But the instruction set itself was really complicated. And with ARM, it's the other way around. The instruction set for the chip itself is really simple. And that used to be that the complicated pieces of software wouldn't run. But because of advances in silicon, in chip making and everything, and also the advantages in new programming languages and stuff, this difference has become way less. And that's by the inherent advantages of this simple instruction set come to the fore, because that means that they can be much more powerful per watt, which is super useful in mobile processors, because it makes your battery, you can get much more battery life with the same size battery.
Yeah, I think we're inherently saying the same thing though, right? The instruction set.
No, because in theory you could make the same thing on an x86 chip integrated as well. You could also put stuff on board.
Yeah. I'm not saying that's necessarily. I think we're making the same point here, that the instruction set inherently allows you to more easily design a chip that is close together. All the different modules are integrated and together, and that inherently brings, I think it brings more of a power advantage, but x86 is also an old instruction set. So it goes without saying that there are advantages. I've been reading a little bit online, and not to go too much into technical details, because I don't think that's what we want to get into. There are also disadvantages, especially on more complicated instruction sets. But I think the main point that we want to dive into is its applicability to consumer electronics here. And I think the undisputed direction that the industry is going to is ARM. The question is, you kind of alluded that to the beginning, is how do you play that? There's a massive opportunity here. x86 in its current state is a market of $100 billion. If you were even to capture a small amount of that market, let's say a quarter of that is consumer electronics, just hypothesis here, if you're able to capture a part of that, that's massively beneficial to chip producers like Qualcomm, like ARM. The question is that going to happen? Is that going to materialize? And what's the best way to play at that? I think you allude to Qualcomm. Qualcomm might have a good new product, but does not have the benefit of the doubt for me, given their track record.
Well, the interesting thing here, if you take it back to basics in terms of that market share, if you now put an Intel-based MacBook next to an Apple M1 or M2 or M3, M3-based MacBook, and you compare what these products do for you, almost every consumer would pick the Apple Silicon laptop, because they're just so much better for the consumer in terms of battery life and performance per watt and the heat and the noise. This Qualcomm chip, yes, it's not out in a consumer device yet, but more and more benchmarks and stuff are getting out there, and it seems to be, in any case, looks close to you know, the real deal. If you're going to put this processor on the shelf at your electronics store next to these other older AMD and Intel powered laptops, the choice, I think, for consumers is going to be crystal clear.
I disagree.
And then you disagree? Why is that?
People choose Apple not because of their Apple chip. It's just purely because of the brand and the marketing. Most people.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about Apple in the sense of Apple versus a Windows laptop. I'm talking about Windows laptops amongst each other. Which one are you going to pick?
Yeah, that could be. If they're able to market its benefits in a certain way. But I don't think that the general consumer is buying a laptop because they're putting two next to each other and saying, oh, which one's faster? It's a bit more, I think, a bit more nuanced than that.
Yeah, of course. But it's not entirely about which one is fastest. But as we've seen, battery life is massively important to most people because most people don't do extremely demanding tasks on their laptops, but do want it to last through, you know, an entire day of college or an entire day at the office or whatever.
But,
and that is something that these chips make possible.
How does that link back to the question of why choose Qualcomm over another stock in this whole landscape, in this whole ARM revolution?
Well, one, because they have made an agreement with Microsoft that they are the exclusive Windows on ARM supplier until somewhere in 2025. It's not exactly publicly known until when.
Yeah.
And within the next quarter, these chips are coming out in Q2 or Q3.
Mm-hmm.
So for at least the rest of 2024, Qualcomm is going to be the only supplier with this style of Windows laptops.
Yeah.
That's quite powerful. If you then add to that and you look at the valuation of Qualcomm and you compare it to an Intel, you compare it to an AMD, even if it's not massively successful, this company is not that expensive. So, you know, it doesn't have to be an insane home run right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I agree with you on the valuation point. I just don't quite see the situation. To me, does not look much different than it was 5 or 10 years ago. And if they come out with a banger product and the exclusivity with Microsoft stays put for the next couple of years and they market this thing really well and consumers really claw onto it, then I would agree with you. This might be then it will be a success. But I think also if you look at secular trends, consumers moving away from laptops, less laptops being sold. Maybe that trend will reverse. Maybe there's a new super cycle. But there's a couple of things for me, both macro and micro, also consumer behavior, that don't make me excited that this is going to be a massive success, especially given the fact that it's the stock is cheap. But it's not like you say, hey, it's still priced above the average market PE.
Yeah, okay, but all tech stocks are almost priced above the average market PE.
That's true.
Yeah, but if you compare it to like an Intel or an AMD, Qualcomm is trading at a PE of 63.
Yeah.
Of 63, excuse me, 23.63.
Yeah.
That's quite a big difference.
It is.
So basically 23.5. Intel is trading at above 32. AMD is trading at above 300.
Yeah, okay. AMD has always been expensive. Intel is difficult. Intel's transition. Mm. But I see what you're saying. I just don't...
But
I
disagree with you. I think the difference, you know, it doesn't even matter if there's going to be a super cycle and all of a sudden lots of more laptops are getting sold, because in general there's still a healthy amount of laptops being sold, and it's going to make a massive difference if a large part of those laptops being sold have Qualcomm chips or not. It's going to be a massive revenue
stream. I think if you're under the assumption that a large part of the laptop market will go to Qualcomm, which is not a crazy assumption, then yes, I agree. the thing that kind of hurts it for me is that this story has been told multiple times. And 10 years ago, I would have thought the opportunity, or 5 years ago, the opportunity would have been much larger than it is now for more macro reasons. But I don't completely disagree with your thesis here. What's holding you back from owning something a little bit more secure, you know, downstream, like an ARM? I know it's expensive, but if you do agree with this massive secular trend, it's not.
It has to do with the same reason why, like you said, it may be more established, yes, but once you're basically saying, yeah, I want to see if that exclusivity agreement will be extended. I want to see if indeed consumers make that choice. You know, when they do and when that happens, that is going to be reflected into the stock price, and then it is no longer worth buying in that sense. And that the same situation is there with ARM. This secular trend is already there in the ARM stock. You know, you're already paying for it.
That's true.
The difference is, do you want to get in before you have to pay that price and get that reward or not? Yeah, I think you're going to make the return if you're going to get in like that. And then it indeed becomes a little bit of a difficult thing where you need to be able to judge, is this going to be a thing?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's it for me, right? I find it difficult to judge that. And that comes down to the... So I have not looked in probably as much detail as you have at Qualcomm itself. But I'm sure it's got a good balance sheet, strong financials. It's a good company. It's hard for me to judge whether this product is something really... going to be something really revolutionary. And it could be. But I would prefer to buy it, the stock, and then you could argue you're too late, fair enough. But once that has been proven, otherwise, what else do they have to stand upon except for maybe their mobile market?
Their mobile market is quite established amongst Android devices. Yeah, there are quite a big player. Also, there
are threats. Google with their Tensor chips, Microsoft's making their own chips, Apple's making... Apple's wanting to step away from Qualcomm on other systems for the longest time.
But even then, if you compare it to the other players out there, look at the other chip makers, look at an NVIDIA or a MediaTek or whatever, they're not expensive. So in that sense, maybe the downside is protected somewhat.
That's true. It's maybe veering a little bit off topic, but it has to also do with the fact that, you know, we're getting more systems on one chip. I like the memory side of things more, but maybe that's going too much into a different topic. I think there is also a bigger opportunity, a bigger secular growth story that you can play a little bit more downstream or upstream.
Well, we can get into memory next podcast.
Sounds like a good idea.
That might be a good topic.
I've been doing a lot of research on memory producers, but yeah, next week. But yeah,
next time, yeah, let's do it. But then, if you look at, for example, the laptop makers themselves, you look at your Dells, your Acer, Asus, HP, then they're basically all not necessarily cheap, except HP. HP is very cheap, which is pretty interesting, actually, because you know we're talking about the valuation of Qualcomm. But, you know, Qualcomm has a P of 23.5, while Dell and or Acer have PEs above that, you know.
Oh, damn.
And only, you know, Asus is at 19.5, MSI is at 18, so close to that. Only HP is really below that at a PE of 8, which is, compared to the others, very low.
Yeah, I would definitely not want to buy one of these laptop producers. I just don't think that's. I believe that most things are going to go into the cloud, and your device will operate like a tablet kind of. All the processing back end will be done somewhere else, and not necessarily on the system.
And even if that doesn't happen, the competition in the laptop market has been so strong for such a long time. There isn't really any real profit to be made there in the laptops themselves. All the profit is is, you know, in the chips, in other stuff in this sector. Laptops is not where it is.
Yeah, you don't see, you have an Apple laptop, and you have a Windows laptop. Those are basically the two categories these days. So an HP and a Dell, to me, don't look... I mean, if you have a keen eye, you could probably tell the difference, but to the average consumer, there's probably not much to write home about. But so you think that to the best way to play this is Qualcomm?
Well, the interesting thing is that I think, you know, what could be a really interesting way to play this short term is Qualcomm. Long term is actually more interesting because long term it might be better to go with a company like Intel or you know, one of the other players, MediaTek or AMD.
Yeah.
You know, because once this exclusivity ends and these other players are going to you know, get into the same field, the interesting thing is that Intel will stock will probably be hit quite hard if this turns out to be a success. And if that happens, then Intel stock might be really a really good buy. If Qualcomm is successful, you know, that might really make an impact on the Intel stock price, because Intel is so really full on the x86 platform yet. It would also mean that they would need to possibly also transition to making ARM chips themselves, which would be really interesting.
They already are, right? Intel split itself into two businesses. One is its system design, and one is its foundry business. And its foundry business will allow third parties to produce ARM chips, such as Qualcomm.
On 18A, which is not there yet.
No, okay, but they're making. There's a lot of things. They're making the steps.
Yeah, they're making preparations to produce ARM chips in the future, but you know, the production and the design are two different things. But yes, you're right.
Microsoft has announced a contract. I think it's more concrete than you make it sound to be.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
well, then it might be easier for Intel to get into that space, and that might be a lots of competition.
But again, that's more downstream. Intel's creating a platform that allows companies to produce their chips on machines, regardless of what architecture. It's up to the company itself what it wants to do on that foundry. But it is putting itself in a position strategically that will allow it to do that more and more. And then it's up to Texas Instruments, MediaTek, Qualcomm, what they do on those machines.
And themselves.
And then themselves. But I'm assuming that they are not going to make that step quick enough. Or I'm not valuing that as a... It's too pie in the sky for me to incorporate that into the share price of Intel.
Yeah. No, I think they would need to see Windows on ARM be successful before they make the transition.
Yeah, it's probably going to cost them a huge amount of effort as well to make that transition. But I think it would be icing on the cake, let's say, if they do decide to go into that direction. Because I do agree with you that for consumer electronics and maybe further, this is the right way. I can't quite answer for myself what the best way is to play this. But maybe the least shittiest option is Qualcomm. And especially if their new product comes out and it's good and it's selling.
That's a
big hurdle. Yeah. But then you're on the money, 100%.
And that's where I will stop making the massive bull case.
Yeah.
The thing is, AMD chips have been better than Intel chips also for a few years now. And there is hardly any laptops out there with AMD chips, because Intel does have a strong hold on the laptop makers to put Intel chips into those products.
Yeah.
So it's not as much as a no-brainer. That is a risk. It is interesting, though, that, you know... Microsoft is also in this actively.
Yeah.
And of course, that whole Apple thing, you know, they have kind of paved the way. So it is interesting. But yeah, I think it's really to be determined. It's not clear for every single type of investor which stock you should buy.
No, I think
it really comes down to your conviction.
I think it's a difficult one. And maybe not to go into our next topic too much, but I think that the next topic will highlight kind of a similar conundrum that we have.
I don't know, man. I feel like the industry of Windows on ARM, I think we're kind of done.
How about we call in the usual
To industry.
To industry, old C.
All right, let's get into... Why are you laughing? That was a perfect introduction. We're keeping this in.
Your clap was way off.
I'm going to use the power of editing to make this work.
I thought I was going to do the introduction here.
No, for the listeners at home, clearly we have not... We've prepared the topics well, as we usually do, but the shenanigans around it are always a bit improvised. So
this is a very professional podcast, Tom.
I don't know, man. If you listen to our past two episodes, they're just not they're not MKBHD waveform kind of level. You know, we're not there yet.
It was professional up until this started.
It was professional until you opened your mouth.
Okay, listeners, anyway. That was the recording for this week. Thank you all for listening.
It was a bit of a short podcast this week, but I got Cass angry, so that happens more often. Let's get into a second topic. EVs. Man, I've been like everywhere you're reading about how the whole thing is just going down the shitter. You have massive parking lots full of these Chinese EV cars. Bad sentiment, bad sentiment, bad sentiment. And what do you have when you have bad sentiment? You have a Tom looking around the corner. It's like, hey, people aren't very chill about this. Does that mean I can get my stock at a cheaper price? So I'm looking at this EV market, and there's plenty of options from startups to established companies to established startups like Tesla. And I'm just not able to, you know, find the best way to play this. And I'm really struggling. Tesla's too expensive. You heard me at the beginning of this podcast. We're looking at the stock price now. It's up another 15%. Kill me now. Other companies.
Just buy Tesla, man.
No. I to be honest, last week we were texting each other, and I don't know if you could read between the lines, but I was thinking about it.
Really?
I was like, it's at a 34 PE. They say they return to profitability at some point in the future. You know, that PE is skewed by the lower margins they're getting.
You should have done it, man.
Yeah, well, you know, 30% in like 2 days. But you know, what are you going to do? So you got Tesla. You got all these little shitty startups. You got the Chinese guys. You got the established German-American producers. And everyone that I look at, I'm like, nah, not really. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
If you had to choose one car company, stock, not car, not company, stock. How would you go about doing this?
It's so tough.
Right?
Because it's also a combination of factors, because the automobile industry in general is a very shitty industry in the sense that, not in the sense that their products suck, because their products can be really nice, but in the sense that in terms of an investment, the competition in the automobile sector is always huge.
It's and like the airline industry.
Yeah, and the margins are usually super slim, and you have these luxury players and you have these mass market players, and it's just a very, very tough sector to invest in. And then you add the whole EV shift of the market. And then you add even further things like the whole, future software thing with self-driving and all this other unproven new technology, which could drastically change the whole sector. It makes it just almost kind of impossible. And I feel like you just have two types of stocks. You have stocks that are either completely unproven and completely... not investment grade, but what's that word I'm looking for? Speculative grade. Or you have these companies, these stocks where the company, the competition is just huge, and therefore there is no margin and therefore there is no investment.
That's true. I mean, clearly people have kind of missed the boat. Tesla was clearly an opportunity 10 years ago. I know it's always been overvalued, but they've clearly been able to grow the business quite a lot.
In hindsight, a few people that I knew, that I know, bought a Tesla years ago, and all of them said, I'm never going to buy another combustion car again. Yeah. Back then, you know, that should have been the moment where I was like, huh, maybe I should look at this company again, you know? Because if you know these what people they are so done. Convinced, this and is... back then it would have been, you know, still very speculative, but in the end, if you look at how it worked out, that would have been, I would have made a lot of money.
How much do these cars cost? Like a Tesla Model S back then?
Oh, they bought very early Model 3s. And back then those cars were 60k or something here in Europe.
You know what they should have done? Put all that money into the stock. And they could have probably bought like another Tesla for what are they now, like 40,000 euros?
No, dude, these cars that are now, like, if you bought a Tesla Model 3 like 3-4 years ago for 60 grand.
Yeah, if you leased them especially.
Yeah, but if you bought them for 60 grand, you know how much they're worth these days? Like 20.
Yeah.
They've lost 2/3 to depreciation.
The problem with Tesla that I read a lot about as well is I talked about a little bit, is the leasing and rental cars as well. Because they buy these cars at the price of that moment and borrow against that. And if Tesla lowers the prices, the return they get once they sell the car again for secondhand is so much lower. Just a little interesting side note, but... Interesting.
Just in general, the sector hasn't taken depreciation of electric cars into account because it's such an unknown, and how our battery is going to hold up, and you know, and people have also realized that the traditional way in which we value secondhand cars, which with combustion cars is miles driven and age, those don't necessarily apply to electric cars.
I mean, they still apply, but in a different, on a different scale, right?
Yeah, because if you have a car that's the same age, which has done the same amount of kilometers or miles, their battery condition could be extremely different if the one car has been supercharged to 100% every day, while the other car has just been trickle charged to 80% at home on a slower charger. True. It's such a big difference. And all these leasing companies have basically assumed these cars have less maintenance costs. They don't have to be in the garage as much, because that's a big expense for these leasing companies. And so they offered these cars at much lower rates than a combustion car of the same purchase price. And now, this depreciation is coming in, and all these companies are like scratching their heads like, crap, we haven't made enough money on these things.
Yeah.
Now we have to sell them. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting kind of vibe around this whole EV thing. I go back to my original question. I'm like, okay, I think most of our listeners, and I think you agree as well, that the secular trend is there.
Long term.
To be honest, just to go straight to the point, I would be, this wouldn't be a two industry podcast if I didn't mention the old man himself. I don't know if he still owns the stock, but maybe BYD is the best way of going about this.
I think he sold some, but I think he still owns a bit. But yes, he was an early investor in BYD, and honestly, BYD would probably be one of the best stocks for this, with the only caveat that, you know, it is a Chinese stock.
It's you get the China discount. As in, you get the China discount, basically.
The discount is there for a reason, because you cannot buy this stock directly. You have to work through, which is basically, the only thing you can buy in the West is a certificate that gives you some sort of
That's been like that for decades.
It could be initially you lose all your money.
I think the biggest threat is the the geopolitical situation, not necessarily the construct of its stock. Moving that to one side, I can see where you're coming from, but for me, it's not a deal breaker to have a part of my portfolio with a stock construction like that. Mm. Tesla's too expensive. Tesla has a couple of fundamental problems. I don't know if I listened to the earnings call a little bit the other week. Musk is doing his waving his wand again and pulling some things out of pulling a couple rabbits out of the hat for the future. The established car makers, VW, BMW, they're all still adjusting to the new normal. Some other established car companies such as Ford are even going backwards, if you can call it that, to a more hybridized system, right? A mixture between EV or electric battery and engine.
Well, the tough thing about that is, what is going to be the regulatory environment?
Even that, just purely inherent business growth because of a good product and a strong portfolio. You have Tesla, you have the Chinese guys, you have the established guys, and then you have this weird like niche of Tesla wannabes. Those are for me the four main Tesla in its own category, China, established, and niche. Not one of them I look at and think that's a fantastic or screaming buy. The only way I think I could play that, and it's I think we've both invested in a stock like this, or we have both invested in a stock like this before, is a company that owns multiple brands, that has multiple bets going, a different tastes that consumers can try from.
Well, they're different stocks, and in general, there's very little opportunity here, but there are certain stocks that are more appealing than others. So for example, on the European side of things, you have your big, indeed, traditional players like your Volkswagen, like your BMW, but you also have Stellantis, which is still selling at a massive discount compared to the others, I think because of the past experiences with Fiat, the brand Fiat, which
was... I mean, if you would break up Stellantis into its individual names, it would be worth so much more. It's like kind of, it's the holding effect, right?
Yeah, but yeah. It's also, I think, that the market hasn't realized the value of all these brands together. And yeah, it's indeed the holding effect. The interesting thing is that they did this merger to make a more powerful, future-proof company. And basically, the valuation of everything they own has gone down to the Fiat level, which is so sad.
It's gone down to the shittiest one, basically.
Yeah. But... objectively, you know, they can put so much more money into the development of their platforms because these platforms are now shared amongst a whole ton of brands and among over so much more revenue with one platform.
But is that what you would advise to our, not financial advice, by the way, big disclaimer, but hypothetically, we assuming that this is going to be a secular trend, I know you can make an argument about it, but let's put that to one side. I want to buy an EV car company to hold in my portfolio for a long time. And there's a couple of ways that we can play it as well, maybe not necessarily car companies, I want to go into that as well. But if I purely had to choose and bet my money on one thing for the long term, I think it would be either BYD or Tesla. And I know it's really weird.
Add a third to that.
Yeah.
And that is CATL.
No, you know what the third one is for me? Lucid.
Really?
No,
really?
I'm messing with you.
I would come with a super serious option here.
Yeah.
Jeez, Tom.
Tell. I forgot the name, but I know what you're going to talk about. See, listeners, we do prepare. Tell me what you're going to get into and why you think that's the better way of going about it.
What do you mean?
The CPAT.
CPAT? You mean CATL?
CATL. That's what I meant.
Yeah, it's the Chinese battery company.
Yeah.
Which is basically one of the suppliers of almost every EV car out there. I think BMW works with their cells. I think even Tesla works with their battery cells. And this company has just become a behemoth in battery production.
What's the ticker for the listeners at home?
The ticker is... 300-750, because it's a Chinese stock and they work with numbers.
300-750. What an interesting name. Found that a really
just whatever. But listener, just Google CATL stock, it's much easier. But it's only trading at a 14.5 PE, which for a sector like this, it's not that crazy. Especially given their market power and increasingly, interestingly enough, their pricing power, because they're basically the biggest supplier of batteries, and all these car companies are screaming for battery supply, you know, they can ask quite some nice prices, which maybe not as much going forward, but that has definitely been the case. Yeah. So that's an interesting one. Why would you honestly consider Tesla, Tom?
Just because a little bit of historic performance, and I still think they're gonna return back to better profitability. And I just if you ask me what's gonna be driving around in 10 years, and that's obviously not the only reason why you should buy a stock, but I have a bit more confidence in Tesla. I still think there's gonna be Teslas driving around. The others, definitely, don't know.
I think the strongest bull case with Tesla is if the US basically bans all Chinese EVs.
If the US bans all Chinese EVs and one of Musk's side projects goes well.
Which Robotaxi, side project?
Robotaxi, full self-driving, cheaper Model 2.
Yeah, well, the thing is with Robotaxi, if that actually happens, then that is an economic paradigm shift. Because that will change the entire cost structure of cars in general, not even EVs, of cars in general. If your car can really be out there making money while you're just watching video on the couch, that's a whole different ball game.
It's a difficult one. It's indeed, it would be a seismic shift, because I only feel this could work if, also from an insurance perspective, if everyone does it at the same time. I don't know. Or at a certain area does it at the same time.
But that's why the Tesla stock is up so much, because China has approved, or seems to have approved, full self-driving Teslas in China.
Yeah.
Will it work? Will it work well enough? You know, in the north of China, conditions, you know, with snow and stuff, can get really bad.
Yeah, and
I doubt it will work.
I've been in China once in my life, and not to offend our Chinese listeners, but, and maybe that's gotten a lot better, but it's not the safest out there. Some crazy drivers, you know.
And it depends on region. Great.
Depends on region, et cetera. But you're talking about, God, what's this company called? Contemporary Amperex Technology Co. Limited, ticker 300750.SZ.
Just call it CATL, Tom. Don't really,
I mean, it just Contemporary Amperex Technology Co. Limited just rolls off the tongue, you know. It's
no, it
just
doesn't.
Hits different. I don't know, man. It those guys in Shenzhen really thought this through well. But you think that's the best way of going about this whole, you know, let's say more macroeconomic shift? Maybe you should just buy an ETF. I don't know.
I don't think there's one best way to do this, but I also don't think an ETF will be a good way at all, because like we've joked about before, you know, your Rivian or your Lucid, these companies are terrible in terms of where they're going and their economics.
Yeah, but you spread your risk a little bit. That's maybe a reason why.
Yeah, okay, but then I would sooner spread your risk yourself around some car companies that you believe in more strongly, because there's too many iffy ones out there.
Maybe that is it. It comes back to my suggestion before. I think it's BYD and Tesla. Maybe just get a bit of BYD and Tesla. In essence, it's the kind of polar opposites.
Yeah, I really don't like Tesla stock.
No, I mean,
you can clearly tell from, you know, this week that this, even though we thought it was going towards normalcy, this is still a hype stock.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like 10 years, 5 to 10 years. This thing is hella volatile. Buy it last week, you know, before earnings, and then maybe, you know, you think differently about it. But
even if you have a longer time frame, 10 years, at the current moment, this company has over twice the market cap of Toyota while making less than half of the income. And their income is under pressure. And the only reason why it's up is because of this unproven robo-taxi stuff. Even though if you look at them from a car maker perspective, they should have come out with this Model 2 or whatever you want to call their 25,000 purely Tesla basing it yesterday.
On history a little bit, that they have proven me wrong constantly. But I agree with your point. I was having dinner with some friends the other week, and they all kind of know that I'm into the investing thing, blah blah blah. And obviously Tesla come Bitcoin and then Tesla. You know how these things go.
Jeez, people are so predictable.
By the way, if you're sitting in a bar after work and you're having a couple drinks and people start bringing up how much they've gained on Tesla, not financial advice, but it's time to sell. It's time to just exit your...
Yeah.
But so Tesla, right? You have the car thing and you're comparing it to Toyota. You're absolutely right. It's way too overvalued. And then people are saying, yeah, but you have self-driving. You have robo-taxi, Model 2. And it comes back to the whole valuation point. And I asked them as well, okay, but how much do you think that is worth? And how do you bring that future cash flow back to today?
And then they always react like, oh, let's just drink another beer because that's complicated.
Now, first I get a massive wedgie because they call me a nerd. But how can you assign, I don't know how much it is, let's say hundreds of billions. It's got to be somewhere in that neighborhood to these side projects that might or might not come out. It's really tough for me to make that calculation. It's not impossible, but I can't do it for myself. And that's why it's maybe not a good idea to buy it. But again, what is the best way to play this? So not the car companies. You've talked about Contemporary Amperex Technology Co. Limited. Again, rolls off the tongue beautifully. What about the chargers?
Too much competition. Yeah.
So the conclusion that we're making here is, yes, it's basically the same thing, car companies. And car companies were competitive and shit before, and they're going to be in the future. It's not a good market to be in.
I think in general, yes. You can tell that some companies' electrical platform is a little better than others, and some companies have a bit more pricing power than others. So for example, a BYD can really just sell an EV at a lower price than a lot of other companies. And for example, a Porsche Taycan is incredible. It's probably even better than a Tesla.
Yeah, but then you get more into like a luxury segment that's different.
Yeah, it's a whole different price range.
I'm talking about your average, family down the street,
But I think there is indeed, in general, I think I think EVs are going to become a thing. But even then, ultimately, long-term investing, this sector will be economically the same, in which whether it's powered by an electric battery or by an internal combustion engine, the economics are going to be roughly the same and therefore a bit crap.
So in the meantime,
there's a lot of interesting things you can do with that. And if you have a lot of knowledge of the sector, you can buy certain companies and definitely make money in the meantime. But this is one for the experts. It's not like it's easy to tell, or with any, you really need to know this space.
Yeah, and I mean, I think to kind of draw to a conclusion, I agree. I think fundamentally it's a car business and it will stay a car business. The reason why you shouldn't buy Tesla is not because it's a tech company, it's because it's a car business. I hear people then, or read, you should look at the chargers. But a charger, whether it be Plug Power, Fastnet, whatever, is the same thing for me as Shell or BP is. It's a commoditized product, electricity, that someone is selling to you, and it's hyper competitive in the end.
And also the barriers to entry with that is so low, because indeed Fastnet is a good player in this neck of the woods, because they have a lot of stations. But what's holding you back from buying your own location with your own charger?
It's low in the same way that gas stations have low barriers to entry.
Yeah. The difficult thing with that is that gas stations only compete with other gas stations, while a fast charger competes with your home box.
That as well. There's an extra competitor there, and your home box might be free.
Your home box is in any case vastly cheaper than the fast charger.
But that's again more of a point in this neck of the woods. But I do hear where you're coming from. But Yeah, so I think the main crux of the story is that this is just is too competitive of a market. Probably will be longer term. You're better off putting your money into an industry where there's a little bit more gross margin, there's a little bit less capex needed, where the barriers to entries are a little bit higher, despite the fact that I think we all agree it is a secular growth story, the whole market.
Yeah, ultimately things are going to go towards EVs, because you can already see in the economics that once you build enough of these things, you're going to get such economies of scale effect that it's just going to be cheaper to produce than internal combustion engine vehicles. So yes, it will go to this space in the end.
But that's kind of what a lesson that I've learned. Not to become too hoity-toity here, but I think also what I want to part to the listeners is, people can tell you that AI, EVs, renewable energy is going to be the next big thing. And they could be very well right, and they probably are right. But that does not mean that buying an ETF or a stock or a basket of stocks is the best way going about this, because of the fundamentals of the business. Yeah.
In the end, it's about the economics. That being said, if you do work in the sector, in the automobile sector, you have a lot of knowledge, you could probably make quite a good bet. It's the same thing that Peter Lynch, the big investor from the United States, used to be like, yeah, if you work in whatever sector you work in, you are you're in a better place to make a judgment on these companies than a lot of analysts that work on Wall Street. So take that That's into true. Account as well.
That's true. That's true. So it all depends on the industry that you invest in.
Yeah. To industry.
To industry, old T.
To industry, old T. Okay, that was another To Industry podcast this week. Next time, as we have already said, we are going to talk about memory in computers, not in your head. Right, Tom?
Nice, Gus.
Yeah, that's nice. Right.
Don't put the listeners on the wrong foot. It's good that you clarified.
Yeah. I felt that was necessary. We talked about how incredibly happy Tom is that he really wants some Tesla stock.
I've got my limit order in right now. When we finish recording, I'm all in. All my chips on Musk.
I really doubt that. Mm. I really doubt that.
No, I think we had a spicy episode. I think we went through a lot, and on the one hand, we discuss a lot. On the other hand, I don't think we really came to too many concrete conclusions.
Well, that's good. That's good, because the listeners should do their own research. We should actually never give them a concrete buy or sell.
No,
you know, they should do their own stuff.
We don't give financial advice, but I think with Snowflake last time, we gave a little bit more of our buying case. With this one, it's a bit more up in the air, but you know. Definitely, you even put me to thinking, right? Some of these names that you mentioned, that you researched, that you showed us, definitely puts you to thinking. But you speak about Tesla. I've just bought a T-shirt that says CATL on it in its full name. You know, you have those Tesla fanboys with the T. I'm going CATL. I don't know. Well, what is it called again?
No. Let's just end the podcast there.
Thank you so much. No, go ahead.
Thank you ever so much for listening. We're talking to you next time again, and maybe we'll bring up CATL again. Who knows? Thank you very much.
To Contemporary Amprex Technology Limited. To industry.
To industry.
To industry.